This is Sunday Focus, a weekly public affairs program that looks at the topics affecting our society and the people who are making a change in the community each and every day. The people who have vision for the next generation. Sunday Focus presents new challenges for us, keeping you informed with topics of local and regional interest. Now the host of Sunday Focus, Christine Manica.
Hello and good morning. Welcome back to another edition of Sunday Focus. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, and for the fourth year, Avera Health is launching its Ask the Question campaign. To tell us more about what programs Avera offers for the community and the events involving starting a conversation, it's Thomas Auden. He is the Vice President of Avera Behavioral Health. He joins us now over the phone. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning. It's great to talk with you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having a conversation on a really important topic. As you said, not an easy one, but certainly it's a really important one.
Absolutely. Before we get started about the campaign, Ask the Question, remind us who you are and your background with Avera.
Yeah, my name is Thomas Auden. I'm the Vice President at Avera McKinnon, in charge of the behavioral health services, so both the inpatient and the outpatient services at Avera in Sioux Falls, South Dakota here, as well as I have some responsibilities for the behavioral health service line throughout the Avera footprint.
What got you interested in behavioral health?
Yeah, it's a long story, I would say. From a young age, my parents were foster parents, and so we had many kids come in and out of the home for sometimes short stays and sometimes longer stays. Many of them victims of different kinds of abuse and trauma events that created behavioral health issues inside of them. And so I definitely got that from a firsthand look as a young child. And then when I was about 12 years old, my parents adopted a family of four kids that had actually come to us as foster kids when they were 3, 2, 1, and a couple weeks old. That also had a pivotal effect. And kind of from about that point on, I really started exploring fields in behavioral health. And I did my undergraduate work in that and my graduate work in that as well.
So you would say that your family really has a huge impact on your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. My parents were role models of how to handle difficult situations. And my mother in particular, she was a consultant for the state of South Dakota for a number of years, and really her only experience with behavioral health was that we had adopted some kids that had some behavioral health challenges, and so she became an advocate and tried to help other families that had some of those same experiences.
When we talk about behavioral health, Thomas, what does that particularly mean? What are the different areas of behavioral health for anyone who may not be familiar?
Yeah. So we're looking at Avera McKinnon, for example. We have a wide continuum of services that would be under the umbrella of Avera Behavioral Health. So it's everything from outpatient counseling for mental health issues. That might be seeing your counselor once a week, or it might be some kind of an intensive outpatient program where we might have a variety of groups and individual counseling up to 9 hours a week. Or partial hospital program where we do 20 hours a week and patients will come from 8 to noon or from 12:30 to 4:30, 5 days a week, all the way up to inpatient care. So where you will stay at the behavioral health hospital, typically we have units for young children, adolescents, four different units for adults, and a unit for geriatric patients. So typically a five or so day stay inpatient. We're really just trying to stabilize things and get people back on the right track. So it's not necessarily an inpatient stay to cure everything, but an inpatient stay to get us back on the right track and get them set up with outpatient services.
Let's say over the last 10 years, what has been some of the biggest changes when it comes to behavioral health?
Wow, what a good question. I would say, well, the first thing that jumps out at me is a mental health parity. So it was a little over 10 years ago now that a law passed around insurances having to have mental health parity. Prior to that time, a lot of health insurances would say behavioral health is not covered. And so it created a real gap for people and inability to get any access to services. Now, I won't say we've solved this, and I won't say every insurance company in the country follows mental health parity to the letter of the law, but I would say it's significantly better today, which creates a whole lot more access for people to get the care that they need. And honestly, one of the best protective factors you can have against suicide would be having good access to both mental health and physical health care. So parity certainly would be one thing that I think is a big change. Telehealth has really revolutionized. I mean, we did it 10 years ago for sure, but it has grown considerably. COVID would be one of the things that helped with that. And I think there has been some laws passed federally that have allowed telehealth to be more of an important component, especially in a rural state like ours, mm-hmm. where it sometimes is very hard to get into care. You may not be within an hour of a provider, so be able to have telehealth where it literally can go from my office to your home. Or, you know, if we've done counseling sessions with farmers when they're out on harvesting their crops. And so, I mean, you have the ability to really go from person to person. That's a game changer that is in our favor. A lot of integration has started to happen more. That'd be a big change in behavioral health, where we're trying to use collaborative care in particular. Is a new project we've done here at Avera, where we have one psychiatrist kind of work alongside of a family practice clinic, and we'll have case managers work with those. Really, there's never going to be enough psychiatrists in the world. So if we can help train family practice doctors, who, by the way, do the vast majority of medication prescribing for behavioral health disorders, how to do that even more effectively, I think that's a really good piece. And then probably the last one I'd mention just would be social media. I may be on the outside of the main group here, but I'll say I think social media has been a great deterrent to our mental health across America. There's a tremendous amount of research that will show that to be true, that the more you're using social media, or those who use it a significant amount, are much more prone to depression or a variety of other behavioral health issues.
What are some of the biggest challenges? There has been a lot of change, as you mentioned, over the last 10 years, but what's something that still needs to be tackled?
I'd start with workforce. You know, it's probably not specific to our industry in behavioral health. A lot of industries would say the same thing, but workforce is a significant one. I mentioned just a few minutes ago, there will never be enough psychiatrists. We hire a psychiatrist today, and they will be full within a week, and they'll be backed up for, you know, a significant amount of time. So that same thing goes true for psychiatric nurses, psychiatric social workers, you know, behavioral health technicians, kind of all of the professions that we are looking for. It's a very complex workforce. The other one that really jumps out me is exists as a challenge is stigma. I mean, there's very little stigma around having a heart condition, but there's a significant amount of stigma around having a brain condition. And so while I'll say it's so much better today than it was 20 years ago, especially in our community, if you think of 20 years ago, it was fourth floor McKinnon, and that was a very pejorative term. It's a different landscape now. I think building a world-class facility here in our city certainly made a difference in that, but I think also COVID helped exacerbate some of the destigmatization of behavioral health issues. So COVID was, on balance, a very negative thing, but it did have some silver linings in it.
You mentioned workforce, Thomas. How do you keep people here in South Dakota? You know, how do you keep the talents with everybody in the community?
Yeah, it's always a challenge. So it's something that we're trying to always balance of how do we do that best. One of the From a psychiatry standpoint, which is the thing I started with and mentioned, we have a psychiatry residency right here at the Behavioral Health Center. And so when we began, so we have 8 residents every year. It started as a 4-program residency. Now we have 8 residents every year, and we didn't used to have a child fellowship, but we added an adolescent child fellowship probably 30 years ago or so. When we added that program, I think there were 2 child psychiatrists in the state of South Dakota, and now there's probably 20-ish, and almost every one of those has been people that have hired or that have graduated from the residency program right here. There'd be a few exceptions, but not many. So really growing our own has been sort of the strategy we've taken with a lot of psychiatry. The same thing is true with our nursing profession. We have a great number of partnerships in our state. I won't start to name all the nursing programs, or I'll leave one out, but we have a great number of nursing programs that partner with us and do a lot of clinical work in psychiatry. Now, psychiatry nursing is not for every single nurse, but those who have exposure to it and have an opportunity to experience it, it really is a game changer for our ability to be able to recruit and retain those people.
If you are just listening, we are talking with Thomas Otten. He is the Vice President of Avera Behavioral Health Services. All right, Thomas, let's have that tough conversation about the suicide rates in South Dakota. Let's run down the statistics really quick, especially those that have fallen over the past couple of years.
Yeah, so suicide is a very multifactorial problem. And so it is definitely one that ebbs and flows. And we've had some ebbing and flowing in the state of South Dakota. So if you go back 4 years ago, we had 202 suicides, and that number went down 2 years straight. It went down to 192, and then went down to 180. And then last year in 2024, it was back up to 198. So still below where we started, but it is a matter of ebbing and flowing. Now, that 198 suicides across our state with a population a little under a million equates out to a 19.6 per capita ratio. So that's how when you compare states to other states, they'll look at how many suicides you had per 100,000. 19.6 is South Dakota's number. That's one of the higher ones in the union. There's, I think we're eighth place currently across the nation. Typically it's about 14 per 100,000, where again we're at that 19.6 number. So we're definitely in a state where we've got a lot of focus on this.
Is there any difference between rural areas and urban areas when it comes to the most recent numbers, Thomas?
Yeah, there is. And there's a number of different reasons on that. Certainly, I think from a farmer perspective, it's a population that has more suicides than we would like to admit. And there's reasons for that. The farmers, many farmers work in isolation. So there's not a lot of colleagues around that are working side by side with them. Farmers have a lot of unique stressors where things are not necessarily in their control. There's a lot of factors outside of their control. And the vast, vast majority of farmers own a gun, which guns are by far the most common way of suicide, not only in South Dakota, but across the country. About 50% of suicides happen in South Dakota by gun. A little higher than that in other states. And so all of those factors lead to rural having more difficulties. We also have, in our great state, Native American population commit suicide significantly higher than the Caucasian population, so 2.7 times higher in the Native American population. So there are a lot of factors that go into suicide. As I said, it's a very multifactorial piece.
I'm assuming that ages kind of vary too when it comes to the latest suicide rates.
Yeah. Now, ages all throughout the board. It doesn't discrepant. There's no discrepancy as far as, suicide can hit you at any age. There's certainly people as young as 10 years old. There's people in their 80s and 90s who commit suicide. So one of the things that's maybe most alarming to us as a state is when you look at suicide rate for young people, age 10 to 29, it is the number one way that people die in the age bracket, deaths of 10 to 29. Across the country, it's the second most common, but in South Dakota, it's the number one mechanism of death. So certainly something we try to focus a lot on is how do we reach the youth? How do we make sure that we address that issue as best we can?
As a professional, how do you comprehend 10 years old? That statistic itself, like you said, it is startling.
Yeah. And it is. It's harder and harder. I would say, when I started in this field, I started at Avera Behavioral Health 28 some years ago. And it was very uncommon that we would see a 10-year-old who had attempted suicide or who had thought in those terms. And certainly over the years, it has gotten lower and lower where those numbers of kids who have reached such a difficult place in their life and things seem so black to them that they make an attempt at suicide. So it's a hard thing to comprehend. The good news, and I know that's a difficult topic, but the good news is what usually is behind a suicide attempt, or very frequently, is a mental health issue such as depression. And depression is a very treatable disease. So if we can get people to the help that they need, get them counseling, possibly get them medications if counseling alone isn't sufficient, I think there is good news in helping people who have these underlying difficulties.
Counseling and other great programs are part of Avera that can benefit suicide prevention efforts like the Zero Suicide Initiative. Can you talk about this and other programs at Avera?
The Zero Suicide Initiative specifically is a journey we began probably about 15 years ago, and it's a national campaign, and really the goal is zero suicides that would ever touch Avera and then commit suicide. Now, that's an extremely lofty goal to say we're going to go an entire year without ever having someone who ever touched the Avera system anywhere and not have committed suicide. Now, the truth is, though, what number would you be able to say is an acceptable number? So, you know, if the number is 50, would we be okay with, well, it was only 50? Or if the number was 5, would we be okay with the number was only 5? So really, you have to go after this audacious goal of zero. And there's a number of factors that go into trying to identify the Zero Suicide Initiative. So, I mean, it's everything from a PHQ-9 screening. So when you go to your family practice doctor or your OB doctor or your psychiatrist, a lot of different physicians, they're going to ask you some questions that will be really the depression criteria, and they're just trying to understand kind of where you're at, trying to screen for a who has concerns that we might need to ask further questions about this. Zero suicide's made up of looking at patients that come inpatient here, and we look at, in the old days, we used to think, you know, somebody's coming inpatient, their thought, plan, intent of suicide. Let's really treat the depression, and then all of that will go away. And that might be true, but we can also treat those suicidal thoughts, and we can also treat how we talk about discharge, and we can also talk about means matters. Because as I mentioned before, by far the most common way of suicide is guns. So I'm well aware we live in a country and a state that is guns are a very important part of our culture, and that's perfectly fine. But if someone's at a point where they're thinking about suicide, getting guns out of the home is a great way to save their life. And if you can't get them out of the home, where can we partner? We'll partner with the patient wherever they'll partner with us. If they say, you know, the guns are just too important to me, I want to keep them in the home, well, can we get them behind a lock cabinet that they don't have access to? Or can we get the guns and the ammunition separated? Or can we get a trigger lock? Anything that we can do to slow down that process, because as it turns out, suicide very, very frequently is an impulse decision. It's not, in the old days, we used to think it was something that happened after months and months of struggle, and you'd see all these warning signs that would happen. And again, sometimes there are warning signs, but very, very frequently, suicide happens as an impulse decision. And if we can do anything to break that impulse, we have the possibility of saving a life. So we talk a lot about means matters, and we talk about, you know, how can we do all of those features that fall under the Zero Suicide Initiative.
I guess, like, it's tough to ask someone to hide their guns or possibly get rid of them. How do you ask the question about suicide to maybe someone who is struggling with those thoughts?
Yeah, so we talk a lot about the campaign, Ask the Question. We started this 4 years ago, and really part of what began that process is we really did some research with our own records, and we looked at all the patients who had ever ended with suicide that had touched the Avera system. And as you look at it, it's a very complex process to look at. But what I'll tell you is after we looked at all this research, a very great majority of the time, you couldn't find anything in the chart that would say, okay, here's the factor that happened. Now I can figure out exactly why they're going to commit suicide. So when we kind of said, okay, there isn't one thing I can say, okay, identify this, and now that means, you know, X leads to Y, and they're a high risk of suicide. There are certainly some things that stuck out, but 73% of the time, nothing was significant in that chart. And so then we started to say, well, what could possibly present suicide? And as we did the research on it, what really sticks out is having an honest, open conversation with someone about suicide. You know, you're never going to plant the seed in somebody's mind about suicide if they weren't already thinking it. But you will have the possibility, if they are thinking about suicide, about an open and honest conversation where they might answer that question, and you have the ability to get them to help. So it's just simply asking, are you having thoughts of suicide? Exactly that way. You know, it's not, are you having a tough day? Are you thinking about hurting yourself? I would call it exactly what it is. Are you having thoughts about suicide? And then wherever that question goes, if they answer yes to that, you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to have the ability to get them to the right resources. So two things that we love to talk about. The first is 988. The helpline runs the 988 call line here. It's a phenomenal service that does tremendous work in helping patients who are having thoughts of suicide. If you live in the Sioux Falls area, we do have, in 2022, we created a behavioral health urgent care that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, functions with nurses and counselors and nurse practitioners. So we are here 24/7 to help people who, if they're having a difficult time, we want to make it very easy for you to navigate the behavioral health system, because sometimes it can be complicated. We've got one place you can go, and we're going to help you get into whatever level of services you might need from there.
As Thomas is talking about, it's all about starting that conversation like we're doing right now. Thomas Auden, the vice president of the Avera Behavioral Health Services, is on the phone line with us. And speaking about the helpline center, Thomas, you were talking about the partnership that you guys have, and that is apparent during the 437 project. That's coming up really soon. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, 437 is a really fun project. It's a brainchild of our wonderful mayor, Paul Tenhanken, and some of his close friends, and they have a passion for making an impact on other people's lives. And so 437, they're literally running across the state, which is 437 miles. From border to border, they're running across the state with about 10 different runners. So they take, I think, 10 miles at a time. Each of them will run 10 miles, and they're going over the course of a couple of days. They run the entire state, which is a pretty impressive feat in and unto itself. It raises a lot of awareness, and they do have a few stops along the way where they talk about suicide, and they talk about mental health, and they talk about all of these important topics. And then it also is a fundraiser, so they raise significant amount of dollars that will be funneled back into South Dakota to make things different, not only in Sioux Falls, but in every part of South Dakota. They focus their dollars. In fact, this year, for the last several years, it's been a large fundraiser for Helpline, and it will always be a large fundraiser for Helpline. But this year specifically, instead of focusing only on the Helpline and the 988 Center, they're trying to make sure that they get some of those funds directly to patients. So if there's a patient who, you know, needs medication but doesn't have the ability to afford medication and thus doesn't get their medication filled, the 437 Project wants to step in and say, hey, we got you. And same thing with counseling or psychiatry, whatever the need might be, they're going to be there to step in and help patients get the care that they need. Really about removing barriers wherever we can to make sure that it's easy to access services and that people can get the help that they need.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Thomas, you're sounding a little emotional right now. What's going through your mind?
Yeah, it's just, it's a really, it's a special community. I mean, we take it for granted all the time that we live in little old South Dakota where people care about each other the way we do. So it is, it's an emotional topic for me for sure. I, like many others, have had friends and family members who have been affected by both depression and a variety of other behavioral health issues, as well as suicide itself. So it's definitely a special place that we live in, and again, a place that's going to run across the state to raise money to help others. It's pretty cool.
It is the 437 Project is what Thomas is talking about, starting that conversation. And I think it's great to start that conversation specifically with the teen age group to make it feel comfortable and make them feel like it's okay to have that conversation. And going back to the Ask the Question campaign, how does it directly impact the teen age group?
Yeah, good question. So we work, we focus a lot on teens. Different years, we've had kind of different focus areas. But teens is one that we kind of constantly stayed focused in on, partly because of what I told you earlier, that in our state, the age of 10 to 29, it is the number one cause of death is suicide. So we stay very focused on that, working with the school system. There's a variety of different ways we do that. Certainly ask the question specifically. We've got posters and we've got toolkits and things that we put into the school's hands, but we also, you know, partner with the school in whatever ways we can and whatever needs that they have to make sure that we can address kind of the teen suicide components. This year, the other real focus area for Ask the Questions is on veterans, another population that has high risk, and a population that has done an amazing job of taking care of us. And so we need to make sure we take care of them.
Absolutely. Now, what are some other ways that some parents, loved ones, teens, teachers, what are some ways that they can identify the warning signs?
I'll tell you the warning signs that we talk about, and I'll give it with the same caveat that I said before, that sometimes none of these signs are present. Sometimes mm-hmm. it is such an impulse decision, there is no real warning signs, or at least no warning signs in real time. You might look back and say, I saw a thing or two. But things that we would call warning signs, certainly if there's a lack of interest in something that used to be very important to them, that's a real key for depression for sure. If there's feelings of hopelessness, talking about wanting to die, those are certainly warning signs. If they're feeling trapped or like they're a burden to others, I think that's significant warning signs. And then two others that we did see in our own research, kind of things that these might be things that happen at least, you know, 5 to 10% of the time, is there some kind of a significant loss. Now, that might be a big financial loss. It might be the loss of a relationship. But those are certainly concerns. And then pain. And again, this can be a chronic pain. It can be a physical pain. It can be emotional pain. And sometimes that loss and that pain go hand in hand. We'd all look at those as kind of real important warning signs for suicide. Now, on the flip side of that, we do talk a lot about protective factors, too. What can be protective? What are the things that really help patients that would be a better chance that they won't end up with suicide? And one of the most important things is just a support network around somebody. So somebody that they can connect with, whether that's a family, a friend, a parent, that support network is critically important. As it turns out in the research, religion can be a great support network. Religion can be a great protective factor. Those who have cultural or religious views can certainly be an important protective factor. And if patients can name reasons to live. I mean, one of the things we talk about as a counselor is, you know, if we can get patients to talk about the reasons they want to live, and whether that's their dog or that's their child or that's, you know, whatever else it might be, if there's something they're looking forward to, identifying reasons to live certainly can be a protective factor for patients. I certainly would encourage parents, though, to stay with your kids on, you know, what platforms are they on? What does that look like? How much time are they on their phone? You know, challenge your kid to a competition. Who can have less phone time? Obviously, your phone will track for you. Every Sunday morning, mm-hmm. you'll get an opportunity to see how many hours a day or minutes, if you're really good, you are on your phone. Less is more in phone time, I'll guarantee it.
Absolutely. Thomas Auden, the Vice President of Avera Behavioral Health Services. Thomas, before we wrap up, anything that you would like to add?
No, just appreciate very much the ability to talk about this important topic. I will say, if you're interested in more about Ask the Question, at our website, which is www.avera.org/askthequestion. There is all kinds of resources there. There's talk about the warning signs, how to help others. There's toolkits, and we would be deliriously happy to help in any way we could if others need help in any of those pieces. But that website, I think, can be a real good resource.
Wonderful. And a phone number in case anybody is having thoughts of suicide or knows someone that's struggling?
Yeah, I'll give you two. The Suicide Hotline, 988, they take up to 1,400 calls, texts, and chats every single month. When that program began just 3 years ago, they were taking 500. So that has blossomed greatly, and 988 is an easy number to remember and a great one to just talk to somebody about suicide. The other number I'll give you is our urgent care right here in Sioux Falls, 1-800-691-4336, and that will get you right to one of our counselors, and they can talk you through trying to figure out what would be the best care for you.
The Vice President of Avera Behavioral Health Services, Thomas Auden. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks much.
Sunday Focus is a public affairs program of Results Radio, Town Square Media, Sioux Falls.